You're listening to Subsound Radio. We bring you streaming and live broadcasting from the capital. This is the El Arpa Podcast. Episode of the El Arpa Podcast. Joining me in the studio is lucky competition winner Maria. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Can you explain a little bit more about that competition that you won?
Yeah, it was a competition for International Poetry Day.
And how did you answer the question correctly?
Well, they gave you some, it was on Twitter first of all, and they gave you some clues, and then you had to find out who the poet was based on the clues. I know I haven't told you how I did.
And you knew and you knew the poet from the clues?
From the clues, yes, because, you know, I'm a long time admirer.
Okay, there's a story that she's not telling on air about that, but nevertheless, and when shall you be in receipt of these books?
We have no idea, because apparently they're being prepared at the moment.
Am I right in saying this is typically Spanish?
I would say so, yes.
Okay, so, now you have a window in the crippling bureaucracy of Spanish culture, no?
Yeah, we'll probably arrive in about 5 years' time.
Okay, well, enough of this lazy racism. We have a podcast to do. And we will be talking about poets such as Seamus Heaney, Pablo Neruda, and how it links into some Irish things as well, following on from last week's podcast as well. So please do join us after the musical interlude, unless you have any last words to say in this part of the show.
Nope.
Alrighty then. Welcome back. Okay, so we're going to talk about Pablo Neruda first, and we were looking at the Anglo and Spanish versions of one of his poems. What's the title of the poem in English?
The title of the poem is How Long.
And in Spanish?
Y Cuánto Vive.
Okay, so right off the bat, there's a difference in the title there, isn't there, between the Spanish and English versions.
There is. So the Spanish is For How Long Does He Live? Or she live, or it live.
Okay, so
third person.
The English translation, the title of it anyway, at least, doesn't really give their full flavor of the Spanish title, the original title, does it?
It doesn't really. And actually, it's quite an essential thing, I think.
When in the context of the poem, exactly. It's, it's a poem where Pablo Neruda is walking around and asking questions, very deep philosophical questions. What kind of questions is he asking?
Well, it's a poem that he's writing after he comes back from exile. And it's basically like asking questions about, just questions about life in general, but he's trying to get answers from religion, he's trying to get answers from politics, and it's basically about, the different things that have disappointed him throughout his life, trying to get answers for things.
Yes, and pretty much he's having a long night of the soul, more or less. And at the end of the poem, he finds people who work with dead bodies, and they have no questions, no answers. They don't think about it, they're just living in the moment. And Neruda is left very unsatisfied by their philosophy, even though he seems to grudgingly acknowledge perhaps it's the best way forward, not to worry about it and not to question so much, because the less I learn, the more I learn, the less I know, is a bastardization of one of the lines in the poem. So, yes.
I think there are other interesting things about the translation. Like, for example, when he's talking about the priests, it says that he asked them after they finished Mass in English,
yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
But in Spanish, it says he asked them after their rituals. So it doesn't really necessarily suggest that it's talking about.
Yeah, it's that is frustrating, because if you read the notes that precede the whole collection of poetry, it's by people who are big fans of Neruda. And if you know Neruda, you know what his stance is on religion in general in two ways. One, he thinks it's hocus pocus. Mm-hmm. So rituals, I think, is a word that's more befitting his perspective on religion.
Yeah.
Because Mass is more of a functional word
that
refers to the practices of the church. And also as well that he's quite a spiritual person in his own way, or he attributes spirituality to animals and plants and trees and different living and inanimate objects. And from that point he derives his own spirituality, you know, and there's a lot of rituals, and his whole act of writing in such a way is a ritual that he creates himself. So, like, you know, rituals, for lots of different reasons, encompasses the essence of Neruda, you know, and to miss out on that word is a little bit of a mistake.
I think that's actually quite important, because the way it reads in Spanish is almost saying, you know, as you were saying, that they're performing rituals, that somehow it's a type of ritual that is not the one that he's involved with, but at the same time, somehow in the structure of the sentence, he sort of despises those rituals.
Of course.
So it's actually implied, as you say, which we know anyway from, you know, from his life and from his writings. But I think that nuance is sort of missed in the English translation, because it becomes more functional.
More functional. It's strange, because I think, you know, saying rituals instead of Mass isn't a big linguistic leap. You know, I think you could easily maintain the essence of that poem through the translation, because it's not a complicated word or a word that doesn't necessarily translate, or a Spanish concept or a Spanish language concept that doesn't jump the gap between the two languages, you know. So I think it's something that's an oversight that was perhaps unnecessary, because the translation should have been perhaps easier to do. But it seems to be quite common, because in this week as well, we've been looking at Seamus Heaney, the great Irish poet, and his translation of Beowulf, and reading criticisms of previous translations of Beowulf, people seem to say that the translations have always been functional as well. So perhaps there's a general trend of translators approaching it from a functionality standpoint, where they're just trying to get the words in the new language without actually thinking of how they should be translated to keep the core of the text. And Seamus Heaney's translation seems to be the first translation of Beowulf that does make that attempt. So you have far better Spanish than me, and almost as good English as me. So you have knowledge of how to translate texts. In fact, you've translated poems for me before, and on two or three occasions. So from your perspective as a bilingual person, you know, translating texts, what are the challenges, and how easy is it to maintain the spirit of the poem or the book?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on the genre. You know, it depends on whether you're translating poetry, you're translating a novel. I mean, of course, there are always like challenges, but for me, no. Usually, people say, "Oh, there's this word that has this connotation in Spanish that you can't really reflect in English," or things like that. And I don't think that's the most difficult thing, you know, because at the end of the day, there are always footnotes to specify. You can always leave it in italics, you know, and then explain.
Yeah.
But I think the most difficult thing, especially with poetry, is what I feel hasn't been achieved in this translation that we're talking about, which is to keep the spirit, to keep the intention of the writer, rather than the word itself. And obviously, I think that's the most important thing, because, you know, the word might be one, but then what it's trying to convey is another. And in this case, I think that hasn't been done well, because for example in the title it's kind of like doing the opposite. It's not changing the title the word for word to make it more meaningful. It's changing it by removing part of the intentionality.
Yeah.
So I think that's a mistake.
To defend the book a little bit, these guys, well, just to balance it a little bit, these guys were the first to translate Neruda, and as far as I can see, I don't think anybody has really done it since then. So their version of it are the books you'd find in lots of English language bookshops around the world. And also what they do, which is quite common in lots of translated works, well, for poetry at least, you can find the Spanish version on one page and then the English version on the other page. So if you do have the want to do it, you can translate it yourself, or if you do end up living in Spain, like I have done, for example, and you improve your Spanish bit by bit, you know, you can try and see what the original version was. Even reading it without understanding it, you can get the essence of the tone and the sound that the poet was looking for. But in saying that, you know, translation as well is very difficult, I can imagine. Maybe there's different factors that we're not aware of in why they made certain decisions. But at the end of the day, it's a translation that's certainly made its way into my life and has given me enjoyment and pleasure and knowledge of Pablo Neruda, and I'm sure it has done for other people as well. But of course, sometimes the poems don't quite capture the Neruda-ness of Neruda.
Well, I think, to be honest, I think it's a trend within translation. You know, that people have different opinions, and some people feel that by doing your own translation, you're kind of like adding to it. You know, you're creating something new. So a lot of people think that that's a way of having a new interpretation.
Do you feel that's overstepping their bounds? They don't have the right to do that?
Personally, I very much prefer translating, you know, trying to give the idea of what the poet or the writer originally wanted, rather than creating something new, because when I'm translating, it's not, you know, my intention is not to create, because for that I can write my own things. I respect it, because it's true that it leads to interesting discussions like the one we're having about the two differences. And
okay.
So, yeah, well, I think it's positive. And the idea of having the two languages is useful, so that people that, you know, can read both languages can compare.
I suppose we'd have to look at the book as a whole, because the poem is unique in the sense that it's Neruda consciously going against what he typically writes about. So he's a very inquisitive, curious person. He likes cataloging things and putting names to things. And he's quite active in preserving the culture and history of different regions, of poor people, of Latin America, and so on. And this poem is going against that. So perhaps because it's not a typical Neruda poem, perhaps it throws translators off a little bit, and they don't know how to express his opinion, because they're so used to expressing it in a certain way, in a certain style, and then there's this poem that goes against that. But on the other hand, he has so many distinct periods and voices and themes that he has covered in his career, that maybe that's not a good excuse if that is an excuse. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting what you're saying, and it might well be the case, because I think in the end, when you're translating an author over and over again, you sort of like become accustomed to his way of expressing things.
Yeah.
So you would automatically, you know, try to reproduce what you've read before, which is probably a mistake in that it you know, misses out on changes in the poet's evolution.
I think what saves it as well is that in the notes you do have the background to how Neruda was feeling or thinking at certain points in his life. So even if their translation doesn't quite express the motivations behind the poem or the mood of the poem as perfectly as it could, in other parts of the book, chiefly the introduction, you can get a sense for what was going on in the background. So, you know, here and there and in different ways, you can get a sense of what the poet was trying to achieve. Okay, so moving along to Seamus Heaney a little bit. Are you familiar at all with his works?
Only from what you've told me.
He's a Nobel Prize winner. For the love of God.
Okay.
Ignorance is
there in here.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, so Seamus Heaney, right. Well, I don't know. I mean, this is completely subjective from my part. The similarities I've noticed between the two poets, the Chilean and the Irishman from the north of Ireland. What I like generally between the two of them, well, they kind of cover the same topics. Neruda is somebody who was seen by the poor people, as their spokesperson, as their voice, and he quite actively tried to meet them halfway as well and do that and write about their lives and about their social situation, because it's quite political and communist and socialist poet. He also spoke about violence and the effect of empires and the destruction wrought by the Spanish Civil War. And these are all themes as well that we can find in Healy's poems. And there's some bizarre, well not bizarre, but they're interesting titles. There's an Ode to a Tomato, this is a Pablo Neruda poem, and Ode to a Jacket, or Ode to Clothes. And these are, it's almost like he's playing with us. He's a real focus on everyday objects and common things. And he's like, he's taking it to the nth degree. It's like very meta. It's like he's poking fun at it a little bit. So you can find poems where he's directly eulogizing over these commonplace objects. And, you know, he talks about plants, rocks, mountains, books, and food and everything like that. And of course, there's a great Heaney poem about his mother, where he's remembering his mother while she was baking. That's how he remembers her. And the line is, her white nails raising scones against two ticking clocks. And it's a very evocative image, but it's something that always puts me in mind of Neruda as well, because of there's such a focus on these commonplace things, but also because of their ability to make those moments sing as well. So politically, socially, on the big pictures, on the small scale, I think there's a lot of things between them. So, you know, but we're running out of time, so it's difficult to go into great detail.
Well, I think if you want to know more about this, you have to read Edna's wonderful article, which you can find on our website.
Yes, you can find it on our website, and also the website speaker.co.co, mm-hmm. And coming to a newsletter to you soon for your post boxes and your envelope holes and... we'll organize that.
And pigeons.
Carrier pigeons and smoke signals. Okay, so this is the end of this little chapter of the Adapter podcast. So join us momentarily for the next part. The show, so some tidbits for you, some breaking news. Last week we were in Colmenar filming with an NGO. You can fill us in on that a little bit more.
Okay, so yeah, it's just a campaign that we're helping prepare to to raise money for people that live on their own, elderly people that live on their own. I mean, follow the updates, because we're going to be working on that over the next couple of weeks and should be able to show something soon.
We were filming last week and we're finishing it tomorrow. We're doing the next part of it and we're finishing it next Tuesday. We're filming elderly people talking about their experiences with young people who interact with them and make them feel less alone through showing interest in what they do and talking to them. And also some of the people behind the charity who are organizing this get-together, and they sell flowers to raise money and raise awareness of these different issues as well. And you're wearing quite a fetching yellow flower, plastic but fetching.
Yellow rose, felt rose.
A yellow felt rose. Yeah. That didn't speak charity or romance or whatever. It what does. So join us again next week for the Elaborate Podcast. So for now, this is Enda Canelli saying bye-bye.
And me saying bye.
Bye. You're listening to Subsound Radio. We bring you streaming and live broadcasting from the capital. This is the Elaborate Podcast.